Chapter 105. On awaking in the morning, Richard Swiveller became conscious, by slow degrees, of whispering voices in his room. Looking out between the curtains, he espied Mr. Garland, Mr. Abel, the notary, and the single gentleman, gathered round the Marchioness, and talking to her with great earnestness, but in very subdued tones, fearing, no doubt, to disturb him. He lost no time in letting them know that this precaution was unnecessary, and all four gentlemen directly approached his bedside. Old Mr. Garland was the first to stretch out his hand and inquire how he felt. Dick was about to answer that he felt much better, though still as weak as need be, when his little nurse, pushing the visitors aside and pressing up to his pillow, as if in jealousy of their interference, set his breakfast before him, and insisted on his taking it, before he underwent the fatigue of speaking, or of being spoken to. Mr. Swiveller, who was perfectly ravenous, and had had, all night, amazingly distinct and consistent dreams of mutton chops, double stout, and similar delicacies, felt even the weak tea and dry toast such irresistible temptations, that he consented to eat and drink on one condition. And that is, said Dick, returning the pressure of Mr. Garland's hand, that you answer me this question truly, before I take a bitter drop. Is it too late? For completing the work you began so well last night? Returned the old gentleman. No. Set your mind at rest on that point. It is not, I assure you. Comforted by this intelligence, the patient applied himself to his food with a keen appetite, though evidently not with a greater zest in the eating than his nurse appeared to have in seeing him eat. The manner of this meal was this. Mr. Swiveller, holding the slice of toast or cup of tea in his left hand, and taking a bite or drink, as the case might be, constantly kept, in his right, one palm of the Marchioness tight locked, and to shake, or even to kiss this imprisoned hand, he would stop every now and then, in the very act of swallowing, with perfect seriousness of intention, and the utmost gravity. As often as he put anything into his mouth, whether for eating or drinking, the face of the Marchioness lighted up beyond all description. But whenever he gave her one or other of these tokens of recognition, her countenance became overshadowed, and she began to sob. Now, whether she was in her laughing joy, or in her crying one, the Marchioness could not help turning to the visitors with an appealing look, which seemed to say, "You see this fellow, can I help this?" And they, being thus made, as it were, parties to the scene, as regularly answered by another look, "No, certainly not." This dumb show, taking place during the whole time of the invalid's breakfast, and the invalid himself, pale and emaciated, performing no small part in the same, it may be fairly questioned, whether at any meal, where no word, good or bad, was spoken from beginning to end, so much was expressed by gestures, in themselves so slight and unimportant. At length, and to say the truth, before very long Mr. Swiveller had dispatched as much toast and tea as in that stage of his recovery it was discreet to let him have. But the cares of the Marchioness did not stop here, for, disappearing for an instant and presently returning with a basin of fair water, she laved his face and hands, brushed his hair, and in short made him as spruce and smart as anybody under such circumstances could be made, and all this, in as brisk and businesslike a manner, as if he were a very little boy, and she his grown-up nurse. To these various attentions, Mr. Swiveller submitted in a kind of grateful astonishment beyond the reach of language. When they were at last brought to an end, and the Marchioness had withdrawn into a distant corner to take her own poor breakfast, cold enough by that time, he turned his face away for some few moments, and shook hands heartily with the air. "Gentlemen," said Dick, rousing himself from this pause, and turning round again, "you'll excuse me. Men who have been brought so low as I have been, are easily fatigued. I am fresh again now, and fit for talking. We're short of chairs here, among other trifles, but if you will do me the favor to sit upon the bed apostrophe, what can we do for you? Apostrophe apostrophe, said Mr. Garland, kindly. If you could make the Marchioness yonder a Marchioness, in real, sober earnest, apostrophe returned Dick, I'd thank you to get it done offhand. But as you can't, and as the question is not what you will do for me, but what you will do for somebody else who has a better claim upon you, pray, sir, let me know what you intend doing. Apostrophe, it's chiefly on that account that we have come just now, apostrophe, said the single gentleman, for you will have another visitor presently. We feared you would be anxious, unless you knew from ourselves what steps we intended to take, and therefore came to you before we stirred in the matter. Apostrophe, gentlemen, apostrophe, returned Dick, I thank you. Anybody in the helpless state that you see me in is naturally anxious. Don't let me interrupt you, sir. Apostrophe, then, you see, my good fellow, apostrophe, said the single gentleman, that while we have no doubt whatever of the truth of this disclosure, which has so providentially come to light, apostrophe, meaning hers. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Dick, pointing towards the Marchioness. Apostrophe, meaning hers, of course. While we have no doubt of that, or that a proper use of it would procure the poor lad's immediate pardon and liberation, we have a great doubt whether it would, by itself, enable us to reach Quilp, the chief agent in this villainy. I should tell you that this doubt has been confirmed into something very nearly approaching certainty by the best opinions we have been enabled, in this short space of time, to take upon the subject. You'll agree with us that to give him even the most distant chance of escape, if we could help it, would be monstrous. You say with us, no doubt, if somebody must escape, let it be anyone but he. Apostrophe, yes, apostrophe, returned Dick, certainly. That is, if somebody must, but upon my word, I'm unwilling that anybody should. Since laws were made for every degree, to curb vice in others as well as in me, and so forth, you know, doesn't it strike you in that light? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the single gentleman smiled, as if the light in which Mr. Swiveller had put the question were not the clearest in the world, and proceeded to explain that they contemplated proceeding by stratagem in the first instance, and that their design was to endeavor to extort a confession from the gentle Sarah. When she finds how much we know, and how we know it, apostrophe, he said, and that she is clearly compromised already, we are not without strong hopes that we may be enabled through her means to punish the other too effectually. If we could do that, she might go scot-free for aught I cared. Apostrophe, Dick received this project in anything but a gracious manner, representing with as much warmth as he was then capable of showing, that they would find the old buck, meaning Sarah, more difficult to manage than Quilp himself, that, for any tampering, terrifying, or cajolery, she was a very unpromising and unyielding subject, that she was of a kind of brass not easily melted, or molded into shape, in short, that they were no match for her, and would be signally defeated. But it was in vain to urge them to adopt some other course. The single gentleman has been described as explaining their joint intentions, but it should have been written that they all spoke together, that if any one of them by chance held his peace for a moment, he stood gasping and panting for an opportunity to strike in again. In a word, that they had reached that pitch of impatience and anxiety where men can neither be persuaded nor reasoned with, and that it would have been as easy to turn the most impetuous wind that ever blew as to prevail on them to reconsider their determination. So, after telling Mr. Swiveller how they had not lost sight of Kit's mother and the children, how they had never once even lost sight of Kit himself, but had been unremitting in their endeavors to procure a mitigation of his sentence, how they had been perfectly distracted between the strong proofs of his guilt and their own fading hopes of his innocence, and how he, Richard Swiveller, might keep his mind at rest, for everything should be happily adjusted between that time and night, After telling them all this, and adding a great many kind and cordial expressions, personal to himself, which it is unnecessary to recite, Mr. Garland, the notary, and the single gentleman, took their leaves at a very critical time, or Richard Swiveller must assuredly have been driven into another fever, whereof the results might have been fatal. Mr. Abel remained behind, very often looking at his watch, and at the room door, until Mr. Swiveller was roused from a short nap, by the setting down on the landing place outside, as from the shoulders of a porter, of some giant load, which seemed to shake the house, and made the little physic bottles on the mantel shelf ring again. Directly this sound reached his ears, Mr. Abel started up, and hobbled to the door, and opened it. And behold, there stood a strong man, with a mighty hamper, which, being hauled into the room and presently unpacked, disgorged such treasures as tea, and coffee, and wine, and rusks, and oranges, and grapes, and fowls ready trussed for boiling, and calf's foot jelly, and arrowroot, and sago, and other delicate restoratives, that the small servant, who had never thought it possible that such things could be, except in shops, stood rooted to the spot in her one shoe, with her mouth and eyes watering in unison, and her power of speech quite gone. But, not so Mr. Abel, or the strong man who emptied the hamper, big as it was, in a twinkling, and not so the nice old lady, who appeared so suddenly, that she might have come out of the hamper too, it was quite large enough, and who, bustling about on tiptoe, and without noise now here, now there, now everywhere at once began to fill out the jelly in teacups, and to make chicken broth in small saucepans, and to peel oranges for the sick man, and to cut them up in little pieces, and to ply the small servant with glasses of wine and choice bits of everything until more substantial meat could be prepared for her refreshment. The whole of which appearances were so unexpected and bewildering, that Mr. Swiveller, when he had taken two oranges and a little jelly, and had seen the strong man walk off with the empty basket, plainly leaving all that abundance for his use and benefit, was fain to lie down and fall asleep again, from sheer inability to entertain such wonders in his mind. Meanwhile, the single gentleman, the notary, and Mr. Garland, repaired to a certain coffee house, and from that place entered, and sent a letter to Miss Sally Brass, requesting her, in terms mysterious and brief, to favor an unknown friend who wished to consult her, with her company there, as speedily as possible. The communication performed its errand so well, that within 10 minutes of the messenger's return and report of its delivery, Miss Brass herself was announced. "Pray, ma'am," apostrophe said the single gentleman, whom she found alone in the room, "take a chair." Apostrophe, Miss Brass sat herself down, in a very stiff and frigid state, and seemed as indeed she was not a little astonished to find, that the lodger and her mysterious correspondent were one, and the same person. "You did not expect to see me?" Apostrophe said the single gentleman. "I didn't think much about it," apostrophe returned the beauty. "I supposed it was business of some kind or other. If it's about the apartments, of course you'll give my brother regular notice, you know, or money. That's very easily settled. You're a responsible party, and in such a case lawful money and lawful notice are pretty much the same. Apostrophe, I am obliged to you for your good opinion," apostrophe retorted the single gentleman, "and quite concur in these sentiments. But that is not the subject on which I wish to speak with you." Apostrophe, "Oh." Apostrophe said Sally. "Then just state the particulars, will you? I suppose it's professional business?" Apostrophe, "Why, it is connected with the law, certainly." Apostrophe, "Very well," apostrophe returned Miss Brass. "My brother and I are just the same. I can take any instructions, or give you any advice." Apostrophe, "As there are other parties interested besides myself," apostrophe said the single gentleman, rising and opening the door of an inner room, "we had better confer together. Miss Brass is here, gentlemen. apostrophe Mr. Garland, and the notary walked in, looking very grave, and, drawing up two chairs, one on each side of the single gentleman, formed a kind of fence round the gentle Sarah, and penned her into a corner. Her brother Samson, under such circumstances, would certainly have evinced some confusion or anxiety, but she all composure pulled out the tin box, and calmly took a pinch of snuff. Miss Brass, apostrophe said the notary, taking the word at this crisis, we professional people understand each other, and, when we choose, can say what we have to say, in very few words. You advertised a runaway servant, the other day? Apostrophe, returned Miss Sally, with a sudden flush overspreading her features. What of that? Apostrophe, she is found, ma'am, apostrophe said the notary, pulling out his pocket handkerchief with a flourish. She is found. Apostrophe, who found her? Apostrophe, demanded Sarah hastily. We did, ma'am, we three. Only last night, or you would have heard from us before. Apostrophe, and now I have heard from you, apostrophe said Miss Brass, folding her arms, as though she were about to deny something to the death. What have you got to say? Something you have got into your heads about her, of course. Prove it, will you, that's all. Prove it. You have found her, you say. I can tell you, if you don't know it, that you have found the most artful, lying, pilfering, devilish little minx that was ever born. Have you got her here? Apostrophe, she added, looking sharply round. No, she is not here at present, apostrophe returned the notary. But she is quite safe. Apostrophe, ha! Apostrophe, cried Sally, twitching a pinch of snuff out of her box, as spitefully as if she were in the very act of wrenching off the small servant's nose. She shall be safe enough from this time, I warrant you. Apostrophe, I hope so, apostrophe replied the notary. Did it occur to you for the first time, when you found she had run away, that there were two keys to your kitchen door? Apostrophe, Miss Sally took another pinch, and putting her head on one side, looked at her questioner, with a curious kind of spasm about her mouth, but with a cunning aspect of immense expression. Two keys, apostrophe repeated the notary, one of which gave her the opportunities of roaming through the house at nights, when you supposed her fast locked up, and of overhearing confidential consultations among others, that particular conference, to be described today before a justice, which you will have an opportunity of hearing her late. That conference which you and Mr. Brass held together, on the night before that most unfortunate and innocent young man was accused of robbery, by a horrible device of which I will only say, that it may be characterized by the epithets which you have applied to this wretched little witness, and by a few stronger ones besides. Apostrophe, Sally took another pinch. Although her face was wonderfully composed, it was apparent that she was wholly taken by surprise, and that what she had expected to be taxed with, in connection with her small servant, was something very different from this. Come, come, Miss Brass, apostrophe said the notary, you have great command. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.